listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We have the pleasure of being in the company, virtually at least, of Major Fred Galvin, United States Marine Corps retired, a decorated combat veteran with one of the most extraordinary military units in our armed forces, Special Forces of the Marine Corps, Force Recon, as well as the commanding officer of a unit called MARSOC, Fox Company, that we've just been introduced to, and it's now making its way through the town of Badi Khor on the 4th of March, 2007. And pick up your story, if you would, Major.
As we approached the village, we saw nothing but military-age men on both sides of the road. There was not the prior 3 hours before where, you know, kids would wave. There's complete absence of children, no women. And as soon as we saw this change, I noticed in my vehicle, I made the comment to those I was in the vehicle with, you know, watch out. And we had a van swerve in and detonate 5 feet in front of our second vehicle or our sixth vehicle patrol. And that happened right in the middle of this bazaar. So this van was filled with explosives, shrapnel, and fuel, detonated a massive fireball, went into the sky over 100 feet, and tore up the road underneath it. We came to an immediate stop. And at that time, to our left on the south side of the road, we received fire from four men that were driving this Toyota sports utility vehicle aimed straight at that second vehicle of ours, which had just been blown up. They were shooting out of their windows as they were driving in an attempt to finish off that second vehicle of ours. And that second vehicle was an ambulance vehicle, so it was not the same level of armor. It was a little bit more vulnerable, and the enemy was targeting that.
Let me ask you, was it identified as an ambulance vehicle, or was they simply going after what they could discern was a particularly vulnerable vehicle?
The latter. It was not marked as an ambulance, but it did not have the full armor enclosure, so it had an open roof and a little bit thinner metal on the side.
They were picking on a weak point.
Yes. So as we became the subject of gunfire from that vehicle to our left, our Marines aimed in and aggressively shot at that vehicle. And that is the picture that many of your listeners may have seen in the New York Times. The windshield shot out with many bullets riddled right into the middle of that windshield and the hood as we really focused on stopping that vehicle and killing the jihadists who were shooting at us from that. As soon as that vehicle was destroyed and there was no threat in that vehicle, we received fire on the opposite side of the road to our right, and more jihadists, but these were in tactical formation, bounding towards us, using fire and movement as they came to assault us, again, aimed at that second vehicle. Our Marines aimed in at the jihadists, shot at them, and they began to retreat and move to very pre-planned positions. So this was a well-trained force, as the intelligence had reported was about to attack us before we went into that village. So we took 5 minutes. We organized ourselves. We had lost radio communication with that second vehicle, which had been damaged. And then we decided we're going to, after 5 minutes, we're going to cease this tribal leader engagement because we knew it's bad. They had three more known suicide bombers in this market. And it was time for us to go. So after 5 minutes, we started to move out. And then we get to experience more gunfire as we're withdrawing in our movement back to our base. This time it was again from the right side of the road in the form of sniper fire again and again at the lead of our convoy. And then the Afghans had dragged a vehicle across the road, blocking our movement back to our base. And then there was a large mob of military-age men that swarmed in front of that vehicle and moved towards us to prevent us leaving that kill zone. So our Marine in the first vehicle smartly fired his machine gun above their heads, causing the Afghans to disperse, and we were able to pass that vehicle that was blocking the road and then move back to our base.
Okay, so I want to just pause for just a second. You've made an excursion to this village that you knew was dangerous for the purposes of holding a meeting with tribal leaders there under the rules of engagement that focused you on winning hearts and minds. You found yourself in a deadly ambush. No women and children anywhere in sight, but a lot of military-age men raining fire and otherwise trying to take you down. There was essentially, at that point, nothing to be done but to try to extricate yourself, minimizing your own casualties, which it sounds like you did rather remarkably under the circumstances. I understand that one of your turret gunners was on fire as a result of that suicide bombing, but managed to get out, I guess, in okay shape. Is that right?
That's correct. He was on fire from the blast that went detonated 5 feet in front of him. He received some shrapnel in his right bicep, but he immediately stood back to his feet, and he got back in the fight and engaged the enemy that was driving a vehicle straight at him. So the men did fight very courageously, and they were very articulate. And, you know, I saw it happen right in front of me. And this is 9 o'clock in the morning on a straight level road. Marines did what they were trained to do for the previous, you know, 11 months before we left from America, and the 2 months that we were on our way over there, they did a great job.
And it really speaks to the professionalism of this unit and why they really are standouts in our military. So let's then proceed with the tale. 20 minutes after all of this is going on, you're back at your base. What news met you when you arrived there, Major Galvin?
We arrived on the base. Personnel from our Marine Operations Center came to meet us at the gate and informed me, hey, sir, there's a report that's already out on BBC stating that we killed women and children, that there was a large number of Afghan civilians killed. And I knew right then, okay, this is an enemy ploy. It happened right in front of my eyes, so I knew this was a ruse, but this was a level of sophistication we had not seen, you know, thrown at us that quickly. We hadn't seen that in previous combat deployments to Iraq.
Yeah. So this is in addition to a pretty impressive effort by the enemy to destroy you, to engage in propaganda and information operations against your unit and more generally the U.S. Forces in Afghanistan with a foreign news outlet, not just within country.
Yes. And the Green Beret colonel and his staff that we were working for absolutely mocked us that day, saying this has never happened. The enemy doesn't do a complex ambush with a explosive device and then, you know, personnel firing from both sides of the road. They don't do this. And then, you know, this media. So this was a tactic that just had began to evolve where the enemy, if they win an ambush against coalition forces, it's a success. And if they lose, this was the very first instance where they brought it to the press. They use a tactic called stringers, which have a pre-made story already teed up, and they provide it to the press. The press is looking for, you know, something that, you know, is horrible like this.
Yeah, a scandal, something that would sell newspapers. Major Galvin, we have to pause for another moment. When we come back, we'll talk about what then ensued in terms of your post-combat activities, a combat of a very different and really quite horrific kind. That and more with Major Fred Galvin, United States Marine Corps, retired, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.